Washington, this is VOA News. Russia's foreign minister says Moscow has no plans to send troops into Ukraine. And the search continues for the missing Malaysian airline jet. I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington. Russia's foreign minister says Moscow has no plans to send troops across the border into Ukraine. Russian foreign minister Sergei Lavrov told state television today Moscow has absolutely no intention of or interest in crossing Ukraine's borders after the seizure of Crimea. Russian President Vladimir Putin called on President Barack Obama Friday to discuss a U.S. proposal for resolving the crisis in Ukraine. The White House says Mr. Obama suggested that Mr. Putin offer a written response to the proposed diplomatic solution presented to the foreign minister by Secretary of State John Kerry earlier in the week. A White House statement said the U.S. has been pressing Russia to pull back its troops to their Crimean bases and allow international monitors into Crimea to assure ethnic Russian minorities there are safe. Earlier in an interview with the CBS television network, Mr. Obama said Russia's military moves near the Ukrainian border may be an effort to intimidate Ukraine. The president met Friday in Saudi Arabia with King Abdullah, addressing differences over security interests across the Middle East. Luis Ramirez is traveling with the president.
The Saudis have grievances about Mr. Obama's decision to not follow up on his threats to strike at the Syrian government after its poison gas attack in a Damascus suburb last year, and what the Saudis see as Washington's reluctance to arm Syrian rebels. In a move that could ease Saudi concerns, the U.S. on Friday said it is considering allowing shipments of air defense systems known as MANPADs to the rebels. The White House says that while the U.S. and Saudi views have, in the words of one senior official, not been exactly aligned, there is no fundamental split in the relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, Riyadh.
The president will make a brief stop in Germany today before returning later today in Washington. The Taliban has claimed responsibility for an attack on Afghanistan's election headquarters, just the latest in a series of assaults ahead of next week's presidential election. Afghan officials say militants fired explosives into the Independent Election Commission in Kabul today, shortly before a news conference was due to begin. A spokesman for the Interior Ministry told VOA the insurgents launched the attack from a nearby house.
There is a house, an empty house, a private house, which was taken by some four terrorists. They entered that house to launch attack on the IEC office. And they have been surrounded by the police. We are still waiting for the standoff to be over.
A police chief told VOA the militants were dressed in burqas, the traditional covering worn by women in Afghanistan. The incident marks the third deadly Taliban attack in Kabul in 8 days. Malaysia's defense minister says no debris from a missing Malaysian Airlines plane has been recovered from a new search area off the west coast of Australia. Minister Hishmuddin Hussein said search teams are pursuing several possible leads. Ron Corbin reports from our Bangkok bureau.
The search currently is centered about 1,600 kilometres southwest of Perth, Australia, where high winds and waves are common. During an emotional meeting with families of the passengers and crew on Saturday, Hishmuddin reassured relatives there would be no let-up in the search.
They know that it's not just a Malaysian effort, it's a global effort. They know that on the southern corridor, Australia is taking the lead. We've got the latest P-8 Poseidons and the Orions out there. We've got a Chinese aircraft, the latest, never seen outside the world before. 26 nations working together.
On Sunday, the Australian Navy vessel Ocean Shield will take on board a towed pinger locator and a submersible drone. The team hopes to capture signals from the flight recorders aboard flight MH370. Ron Corbin for VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
The United Nations Human Rights Council has extended an investigation into human rights abuses in North Korea for 1 year. U.S. State Department spokeswoman Marie Harf in a statement welcomed the extension and pledged support for establishing a field office to monitor human rights situations in North Korea. Visitors to the popular world-famous amusement park Disneyland in Southern California got more excitement than they may have expected when a 5.1 magnitude earthquake shook metropolitan Los Angeles. Disneyland officials shut down the rides in the park for about an hour to conduct safety checks before reopening. Residents said the shaking from the shallow quake lasted about 30 seconds, and in Southern California, that is very common. I'm Marty Johnson, VOA News in Washington. There's more news at voanews.com.
Good evening.
This is Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Mpoga.
And I'm Odette Frazier. Thanks for joining us.
The good side, they're running things. The bad side is they're repressing a lot of dissent, and not necessarily disloyal dissent, but any dissent. That bothers President Obama and his administration. It really does.
Egypt's former military leader declares his candidacy, as some politicians call the election a farce.
So the size of your farm determines the amount you get from waste. Because what I see, most of these local farmers, they do prefer the local waste compared to the fertilizer that government is giving to them, because why? There's no sufficient money to afford the government, so they come for the local ones.
Nigeria plans to harness a nuclear energy for development purposes.
We build self-esteem to these kids on the lessons that we render to the children. Others, when they were coming, they were maybe desperate, thinking that maybe it's the end of our lives. But
and in Malawi, an anti-AIDS organization teaches youth living with HIV/AIDS how to cope with the infection. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa.
With the presidential elections fast approaching, Egyptian Field Marshal Abdel Fattah al-Sisi officially declared his candidacy this week. Al-Sisi's decision to run for president comes as the U.S. is pushing Cairo to improve its treatment of journalists and political opponents. VOA's Scott Stans reports on what the decision means for an Obama administration trying to balance support for Egyptian democracy with security concerns in the region.
The former general's candidacy has been expected for months, so U.S. officials say they're focusing now on the freedom of Egypt's electoral process. Deputy State Department spokeswoman Marie Harf.
It is up to the people of Egypt to determine their future. And we have also repeatedly said that as the people of Egypt go to the polls to do that, it must be in a climate that's free from intimidation, where people feel they can vote for and support whatever party and whatever candidate they want to. And we have raised concerns with the interim Egyptian government about the ability for citizens to freely express their opinions.
Especially as most of the recent U.S. human rights concerns followed El-Sisi's toppling of Egypt's first democratically elected government, leaving Washington in what former U.S. Ambassador Adam Arely calls an awkward position.
I mean, the good side, they're running things. The bad side is they're repressing a lot of dissent, and not necessarily disloyal dissent, but any dissent. That bothers President Obama and his administration. It really does.
Concerns not shared by Washington's Arabian allies, who opposed the Muslim Brotherhood ousted in al-Sisi's coup.
Saudi Arabia and the UAE, quite frankly, I think you're going to have to agree to disagree on Egypt. Saudi Arabia and the UAE are backing Sisi and his and the current government in Egypt to the hilt because they see the alternative as chaos.
But it's Egyptian security forces that are most likely to spread chaos in an uncertain political environment, says American University professor Hillary Mann Leverett.
It is the torturing, the imprisoning, the complete suppression. We may even see the public execution of Muslim Brotherhood leaders. That is something that will just radicalize the Muslim Brotherhood in a way that happened in previous presidencies in Egypt under Nasser and Sadat, where you also had the precursors of al-Qaeda.
Threats that she says cannot be resolved by joining Saudi backing for General Sisi.
The idea that we can work with Saudi Arabia in Egypt to suppress popular views, popular dissent, is a recipe for disaster.
Deepening Washington's divide with Riyadh is the war in Syria, where Saudi Arabia wants the United States to take a more active role backing rebels fighting the government in Damascus. U.S. Institute of Peace analyst Steve Heidemann says that's affecting how Saudi Arabia approaches elections in Egypt.
I think it increases the risks of Saudi Arabia taking a somewhat different position on what's happening in Egypt than the U.S. would like to see. So there are a variety of spillover effects that follow.
Following his meetings here in Italy, President Obama travels to Saudi Arabia, where he and Secretary of State John Kerry are meeting with King Abdullah. Items of concern include democracy in Egypt, war in Syria, efforts to contain Iran's nuclear program, and Israeli-Palestinian peace talks. Scott Stearns, VOA News, Rome.
This week, Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan said his country intends to harness nuclear energy for development purposes, which to most Nigerians means one thing, providing electricity. But some analysts say that Nigeria should figure out how to keep the lights on with the huge natural resources it already has. Heather Murdoch has more for VOA from Abuja.
Alice Umukuru is a vegetable farmer in the oil-rich Niger Delta. Fertilizer, she says, is supposed to be for sale for about $16 at a government-subsidized price.
The flower drop is good for our crops. Because what it makes us, they use.
But subsidized fertilizer never makes it to her village, she says. Sometimes she can buy fertilizer that was purchased at a subsidized price in the village market from someone who bought it in the city. But the price is marked up, she says, and it is not always available. For a long time, Umukuru says, she could only harvest a half bucket of okra and a half bucket of tomatoes every 2 days. Now she harvests five times that much. Her secret is simple. She buys bags of chicken droppings from local poultry farms for sometimes as little as 30 cents a bag. Chicken farmers say they also benefit from the arrangement and sell for low prices to encourage vegetable farmers to come clean out the manure from their farms. Mathias Ojikovu is a poultry farmer in Delta State who has about 3,000 birds. He says he makes about $25 a month selling chicken droppings to local farmers. Larger farms, he says, can make as much as $100 a month.
So the size of your farm determines the amount you get from waste. Because what I see, most of these local farmers, they do prefer the local waste compared to the fertilizer that government is giving to them. Because why? There's no sufficient money to afford the government, so they come for the local ones.
But specialists say chicken manure to grow vegetables is trickier than using packaged fertilizer. For example, crops can burn if the manure is not composted long enough, says Oka Ogini Eboibi, a senior lecturer at Delta State Polytechnic.
The farmers need to be properly educated to know how to apply these fertilizers. Because when you get the farm droppings, in the raw state, it contains some acidity.
In 2012, the Nigerian government launched a program to expand the number of farmers who actually get the subsidized fertilizer, which was then 11%. The government now sends text messages to millions of farmers with vouchers and instructs them where to pick up their subsidized fertilizer, substantially reducing the amount of corruption in the system. Officials say 60% of farmers benefit from the subsidy program. But in Africa's most populated country, with more than 160 million people, there are still a lot of farmers searching for fertilizer and turning to the chickens for help. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
In the past 12 months, thousands of children in Cameroon have died of severe diarrhea caused by a rotavirus, with thousands more said to be hospitalized. The United Nations has come in to help with the vaccine, but medics say the situation is difficult given the acute shortage of clean water in major towns. Moki Edwin Kinzika has more for VOA from Yaoundé.
Five-month-old Gracious Yinyoi cries as he is administered Rotatec, a vaccine that protects babies against common types of rotaviruses. Dr. Nula Desiree says the baby is one of a million Cameroonian children they are out to save.
Le rotavirus provoque une maladie diarrhéique beaucoup plus courante.
The doctor says rotavirus has been causing diarrhea among children under five and is especially dangerous for kids between 12 and 24 months. The virus can lead to severe dehydration, and if nothing is done, the child dies. The United Nations says children vaccinated against rotavirus are 70% less likely to be hospitalized for diarrhea compared to unvaccinated children. But Dr. Desiree says vaccines alone will not solve the problem in Cameroon.
Il faut dire que globalement c'est un problème d'hygiène, d'hygiène de salubrité, d'hygiène du milieu, d'hygiène corporelle.
He says it must be made made clear that the sickness is due to poor hygiene and sanitation, and he adds that people must have access to good quality water and deep latrines. Dr. Desiree says the vaccine without sanitation will be ineffective and the disease will continue to spread. Many towns in Cameroon are suffering from an acute shortage of drinkable water. The capital, Yaoundé, has gone without sufficient water for 3 months. Meanwhile, 70% of people in rural areas do not use latrines and prefer to defecate in bushes. Dr. Marie Kobela of the country's national vaccination program told VOA that basic hygiene in Cameroon needs to be improved.
Améliorer l'approvisionnement en eau, y compris le traitement et le stockage, l'hygiène du milieu, l'utilisation des latrines.
She says improve potable water supply, improve hygiene, use toilets, quickly go for oral rehydration if the child has diarrhea. Dr. Kobela adds that if a child vomits and if there are blood spots in what he or she throws up, the child should be taken immediately to a hospital. In Africa, rotavirus kills more than 600 children each day, and thousands more are hospitalized or require clinic visits, but the facilities are always not available. The United Nations is supporting the rotavirus vaccination program by making available about 1 million doses of vaccine. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé.
In Malawi, an anti-AIDS organization is working to teach youth living with HIV/AIDS how to cope with the infection. Under a new initiative, the Elizabeth Glazer Pediatric AIDS Foundation has established teen clubs where youth learn how to deal with stigma and discrimination. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
In the central district of Nshewu, most of the standard six students at Dombole Primary School were excited about their class in life skills. But Martha, who is HIV positive, did not enjoy it. She says she was feeling ashamed in class, more especially during life skills lessons, that she wouldn't dare to answer any question relating to HIV/AIDS because she feared her classmates would discover that she was HIV positive and start avoiding her. Sometimes she would pretend to be sick when the lesson starts and leave the class. The 13-year-old Martha says she was tested positive last year, soon after the death of her single HIV-positive mother. Martha had always been sick until a health surveillance assistant asked her grandmother to take her to Nshewu District Hospital for voluntary HIV testing. She says when the doctor told her that she was HIV positive, she cried and asked her grandmother where she got it from, and her grandmother told her she got it from her late mother. She says she was devastated and thought that her future was doomed, having heard stories of people dying from AIDS. Statistics show that mother-to-child transmission account for approximately 5% of the new infection in Malawi, despite several interventions to prevent child infections. Martha was put on ARVs right away, and the medical doctor introduced her to a teen club at the hospital, a youth-friendly psychosocial program which provides safe haven for youth living with HIV. The initiative, the first of its kind in Malawi, was started in 2011 with funding from Elizabeth Glazer Pediatric AIDS Foundation. A total of 140 children are currently part of the initiative, operated from Nshewu District Hospital, where they are counseled and tested, initiated on a 5 ARV treatment, and introduced to a support group. Eveline Sodoka is a nursing and midwifery technician at the hospital who coordinates the teen club. She says its members within the age range of 12 to 20 gather every last Saturday of the month to learn ways to maintain a healthy living and self-confidence.
We build self-esteem to these kids on the lessons that we render to the children. Others, when they were coming, they were maybe desperate, thinking that maybe it's the end of our lives. But according to lessons that we give them at the teen club, they build self-esteem. They know that they can rely on themselves. They are able to do some other things that they were looking themselves down, that I cannot manage to do such a thing.
Nsodoka says an average of 60 to 70 members gather each Saturday to take part in various outdoor sports and receive health care when needed. It also gives an opportunity for the adolescents and caregivers to discuss the illness in a safe environment that's free of stigma and discrimination. Participation in the teen club has helped Martha make new friends and have given hope that she will live her dream of a prosperous future. She says she has realized that she's like any other person and has nothing to worry about because they are being told that life is lived once and are advised that if they will be worried, they will die of worries. She says she's now actively participating in her classes, which include life skills lessons, and has hopes of becoming a journalist specializing in healthcare. Martha's ambitions resonate well with the country director for the Elizabeth Grazer Pediatric AIDS Foundation, Nicole Bonham. She told VOA that the initiative is also used as a training ground for future HIV/AIDS activists.
And I hope that we can create ambassadors and people living with HIV who can speak about the issues articulately. And so we hope that some of these young people will become spokespersons, because there's not enough people living with HIV who can speak openly about living with the disease and really help inform programs and policies and the work we do.
Malawi has one of the world's highest infection rates. Statistics show that 10% of the population between the ages of 15 to 49 is HIV positive. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Green Fuel is a joint venture company between the state-controlled Agricultural Rural Development Authority, ADA, and companies linked to Rotenberg, Magdom Investments, and Rating Investments.
Meanwhile, in Zimbabwe, Greenfields, a company with links to controversial businessman Billy Rotenberg, has said the government, which wants a 51% stake in the fuel blending company, should pay for the shares at market value to avoid prejudicing investors. For VOA, Ione Kifera has details from Harare.
Hello, I'm Kim Lewis.
And I'm Yehiyas Wuhib.
Together we host the Voice of America's informative program, Africa News Tonight.
We present a thorough summary of the day's events, featuring interviews with newsmakers in Africa and the world.
Also, Sunny Young drops in live with sports, and we have features on science, health, and business.
Tune in Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC right here on The Voice of America.
Sorry about that technical glitch. Now we go to Harare to join Ione Kifera, who has a story from Harare on Green Fuels, a company that is now tussling out with the government there over shares in that company.
Green Fuel is a joint venture company between the state-controlled Agricultural Rural Development Authority, ADA, and companies linked to Rotenberg, Magdom Investments, and Rating Investments. It was controversially issued an ethanol production or mandatory blending license last August, despite massive disagreements in the Unity Government Cabinet and the ZANU-PF government following the 2013 elections. Opponents argued the company's licensing would result in an individual benefiting at the expense of the nation. ADA has 10% shares in the company, and now the government has indicated it wants to acquire a 51% stake in the firm. But Parliament heard from Green Fuels officials today, who told the Indigenization Committee that they are ready to comply with the government's directive to convert the project from a build, operate and transfer system to a joint venture, with the government having the majority shareholding. Green Fuels General Manager Graham Smith told the committee government must pay to acquire the majority shares in the firm.
Magdom and Green Fuel agreed into a joint venture with the government of Zimbabwe on commercial terms so as not to prejudice the shareholders or place the financiers at risk. This commitment has been communicated to the government through the Ministry of Agriculture, Mechanization and Irrigation Development. In line with such directive, Green Fuel, Magdom and ADA, who represent the government of Zimbabwe, into a joint venture based upon the initial commercial value of the contributions brought to the project to date.
Magdom, he said, has since invested more than $330 million in the firm, representing a 90% stake in the project, while government has put in $37 million an equivalent of 10%. Green Fuel legal advisor Derek Elliott explains they are negotiating with the Agriculture, Energy and Indigenization Ministries to implement the government directive.
These negotiations are currently in process and underway. That is not detracting from the fact that the companies in question are indigenous, indigenously owned. The transaction per se, which you are relating to, is essentially what we are working towards, government acquiring 51%.
The officials refuted reports that they owe the Zimbabwe National Water Authority $7 million, saying it was Xinhua, which owes the company slightly more than $1 million.
We dispute this and, based on our reconciliations, have ascertained that Xinhua in fact owes the estate $1.26 million due to the fact that they have been overcharging for water actually used. In addition, we have rehabilitated and continue to maintain the Middle Sabi pump house at Xinhua's cost. We pay electricity and other service charges for which Xinhua would ordinarily be liable.
They said the company had also carried out and submitted its environmental impact assessment report to the Environmental Management Agency, but it is yet to get a response. The law stipulates that in the event that the EMA does not respond in 60 months, the report would be deemed approved. The officials said their company had faced stiff resistance from foreign and local oil companies who fear mandatory blending, saying this would eat into their profits. The situation, they said, is however under control. The company, which produces ethanol for blending with unleaded petrol, said while the blending threshold had been reduced from E15 to E10 due to sugarcane shortages caused by flooding, it was working on measures to build reserve stocks that could last for up to 2 months. The Zimbabwe Energy Regulatory Authority announced mandatory blending of fuel, ethanol, at the level of 5% ethanol and 95% unleaded petrol on August 15 last year. This followed the issuing of an ethanol production license to Green Fuel on August 5, but fuel prices have not dropped following the mandatory blending. Former Energy Minister Elton Mangoma, who refused to grant Green Fuel a license during his time in cabinet, said the company's licensing soon after the elections was a scandal because it would result in an individual benefiting at the expense of the nation. This is Ivan Chifera.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from The Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Do you love African music?
Music time in Africa.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa.
And see to come in the second half of the program, our Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. Then we'll have a commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University.
It's now time for our Saturday music spot. So sit back and enjoy.
Oh, Boni mama lengu bana bana. Bilaga papeza ya barate. Bilaga papeza ya barate. Atake ene maya mobeswe. Seria buki porte.
Vendela.
Seria koti cuisine.
Vendela.
Seria lemalisane.
Vendela.
Seria lemalinzomwe.
Vendela.
Seria lena yemungwa.
Vendela.
Seria liagala yemungwa.
Vendela.
Seria lemalisane. Seria cotina suca, seria cotina e 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 seria Moni mama lengu bana bana, bilanga pape zaya bana te, bilanga pape zaya bana te. Ataka enya maya mobeswe, seria kuki korte, seria koti parke, seria fungoli dosye, seria fungoli lesaye.
Parti Zana, Abracadabra, Gogamama, Gonda Mogago,
Parti Ambrosa,
Yasantika Sombo,
Melanja Simanas, and the celebrity about the Batamina, Melanja Simanas, and the celebrity about the Batamina, the Elangana, she is a revolving a voting for Merengue. Zaki do vena jere amara lo kono ku fali su sute. Shiri na ngazo to pete ko le kapom de tiru wa to kisa. O de marsh on dire un poisson qui nage dans la mer. Mara mo kesa lo pete nemo si misa ta papie. Pazala tu zor na titi de yar jana irambo. Bebe so kaza ngol mazam la katela ya mondelo. Ai ba ka valere la basi gate so kaza bebe sa yambo. Zizo ki do vandi na lo zangol zakana. Baby, Valera, but I'm waiting for the fundraise.
We echo the moon and the president in Nango. Let's go down out of the Kitera moon.
Fundraise, but Baluso Tarate, only Kilutun and the Rasamashu. Chuchu, Chuchu, Luso, one of my mind. Forget the Sherry, and I. Quelle balançoire, ce qui est matissi, ma peine à m'étiquer, ce qui est l'obité, apprécie-toi, ce qui est l'obilia, et ta bon appétit, quelle vie debout, et vous convoyez, ce qui est l'obijo, que dans l'intervention, la chouchou, 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 Et on a passé quatre. Ce dialogue. Donc. Et on a passé quatre. Juju, juju, juju. Et on a passé quatre. 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 Et on a passé quatre.
Ngapena mitiki, usogia kitisi. Ngapena mitiki, soki sobilia. Ngapena bon appétit, usogia mito. Ngapena pesi troa, usogia lobi kak. Ngapena kumisi masu. Ngapena chuchu an, ngapena mara mama. Ngapena chuchu an, bon appétit. Ngapena chuchu an.
Shut up!
Yes, and that Coupe Bina Bam Bam by DRC's Will Longoma brings us to the end of our Saturday Music Spot. And now the Saturday Commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. I'll take it away, Dr. Nyang.
Good evening, Africa. It is always a pleasure sharing my reflections on American foreign policy in Africa. Every passing week, I pay a great deal of attention to the headlines, trying to figure out how Africa's relations with the United States is covered by the media. We have our journalists, our broadcasters, and a number of other people who are blogging about America's relations with Africa. This particular week, a number of events have been in the news, and they have consequences for America's relations with Africa. Most importantly, the question of Ukraine and the manner in which America's relations with Europe affects America's relations with the former members of the Soviet Union and Europe. We go back to the question of the Cold War. President Obama's speech in Brussels highlighted the events of the Cold War and what it meant for him personally, for the American people, and of course for the Africans, because his biography is now intimately linked to African history and to the history of American-African relations. Echoes of that relationship were heard all over the world when he commented about the history of the Cold War, what it meant for Europe, what it meant for America, and what it meant for the rest of the world. There are three points to be brought out, from my point of view, with regard to Africa. Number one, when we look at America's relations to Africa, the question of state sovereignty becomes paramount. At the time of independence, the African leaders, like Kwame Nkrumah and all the other African leaders who were affected by the independence of Ghana, paid close attention to the question of nation building and state building. With regard to nation building in Africa, one must take into account the question of Ghanaian independence, which was reinforced by the independence of all the Francophone countries. And that was why in 1960, most of the political historians and political scientists who are looking at the African situation called that year Africa's year at the UN, because Africa became well represented at the UN. Prior to the independence of Ghana, we only had Liberia and Ethiopia south of the Sahara. And that was why Kwame Nkrumah convened the fall of African government in 1958. And this had implications for state rights, because when the Africans met in Ghana again to have the All African People's Conference, most of the Africans who went there were not independents. But the question of state right and nationalism came up. So African nationalism was very much an issue in American policy. The American government was very much concerned about that. President Eisenhower, who was representing America big time, because here was the American general who won for the United States and the West the war against the Nazis. So state right became very important. It affected the Germans at that particular time in history, because the Germans were divided between East Germans and West Germans. And this was because of their defeat in World War II. And that implications for the people of Ukraine and many of the other countries that later became part of Soviet Union. So America's relations with Africa, therefore, was very much linked to the Cold War. What President Obama did briefly was to remind the Europeans the dangers of war and how the Cold War could have led to a fatal mistake which would have cost all humanity their lives. And the Cuban Missile Crisis was a very important crisis in 1962. At that time, most of the African countries were not independent. It was only Ghana, Guinea, Mali, and they had the Ghana-Guinea-Mali Union, the Senegalese, and the Francophone countries that were independent became independent countries that have new states with new nationality, new flag, dealing with the United States. So when President Obama spoke about the events in Ukraine to the Europeans, he was going over the history we are looking at now. So if you're an African politician on the other side of the Atlantic looking at American-African relations, this becomes a fundamental issue. And African leaders have to go back in history and look at that relationship, how sovereignty is an important issue in any dialogue about state rights or state building and nation building. So when Ghana became independent, you have nation building, state building, and this was duplicated all over Africa. The Africans faced the problem of South Africa and settler colonialism. It was in Algeria, eventually led to the independence of Algeria. President Kennedy was very concerned about what was going on in Algeria. And of course, when we look at the history of President Kennedy and Algeria, you will see the record how America's interest in what was happening in Algeria would later on spread to Kenya, from where President Obama's father came, which was also controlled by settler colonialists. But gradually, the Kenyans became independent, and the bandwagon effect will go all the way to the other settler colonies like Rhodesia, Southern Rhodesia, Northern Rhodesia, became Zambia and Zimbabwe. You go all the way to South Africa, where finally apartheid collapsed. And that's the way it is today.
Thank you, Dr. Nyang.
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America.
From all of us here at Nightline Africa, we thank you for joining us tonight. I'm Douglas Impoga.
And I'm Odette Fraser. Have a good evening.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is working on many different fronts to end the political crisis in South Sudan, alleviate the suffering of the people there, and restore the troubled nation to peace and stability. We have strongly supported the IGAD-led negotiations in Addis Ababa, pressed both sides to implement the January 23rd Agreement on Cessation of Hostilities, and welcomed efforts underway by the African Union to ensure justice and accountability for atrocities and violations of human rights. With our support, the IGAD Monitoring and Verification Mission will be able to do its important work of monitoring the Cessation of Hostilities Agreement. We are also providing significant assistance to address the mounting humanitarian crises. This week, the United States announced an additional $83 million contribution to help Sudanese displaced within South Sudan and those who have fled into Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Sudan. The United Nations Mission in South Sudan, known as UNMISS, represents the international community there. UNMISS protects civilians and makes it possible for humanitarian aid to reach those in need. The United States strongly supports the work of UNMISS. We call on all parties to fully cooperate with it and allow it to do its work without interference. We call on the government of South Sudan to ensure that threats against UNMISS cease. We are very concerned that UNMISS facilities have come under fire in recent days, jeopardizing the lives of peacekeepers and displaced people sheltered there. These attacks must cease immediately. Those involved in the attacks, those who have raided UN and humanitarian warehouses and offices, and those who have killed workers delivering humanitarian aid must be held accountable. The suffering has gone on too long. The world is waiting for all parties in the conflict to finally implement the cessation of hostilities agreement they signed on January 23rd. The fighting must end now.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.